listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 92 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this roundtable edition is Chris and Bolton.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
I'm great.
Good, good, good. Finishing an album?
Yeah.
Another one?
Another one, a different one than you were talking about.
He's always finishing albums.
Yeah.
Speaking of your music, one of our listeners, Darren Riley, did you see his post on Twitter?
I'm not sure.
You need to check your Twitter more often, but...
It's about
after your little plug of getting some of your music for free in the last Roundtable Edition, he went and got it, and he said the one song, User Guide to Change, just isn't the same without the crowd and me saying hello afterwards.
Oh, I did see that. You know, I can't remember if I actually wrote him back or just... thought to write him back and say, you know, he can plug in his own crowd noise and, you know, scoot your little intro on the beginning of it and then listen to the whole song that way.
So if you guys haven't gathered, they're talking about the intro song to the podcast, which
exactly is actually Chris.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is available at at my website.
I'm feeling a little edgy this week.
Coffee?
Huh? No.
Too much coffee?
No, just like anger.
Lost is coming to an end?
That and other things. You know, this whole music thing, it's just an emotional roller coaster up and down. And every time I get back to the station, I say, I'll go again, please.
You had a disappointing show, didn't you?
No, the show itself wasn't disappointing. No, actually, we played our first show in Seattle last weekend, and the interesting thing with the show is we're sitting there waiting for the first band to play, and there's like 30 people there, and Peter, our drummer, comes over and says, hey, that's Dave Bazan over at the bar.
From Pedro the Lion.
Yes, from Pedro the Lion, and now he does solo stuff, and I was like, oh, that's cool, and then like 2 minutes later, he comes back, oh my gosh. Not only is he here, but Ben Gibbard of Death Cab for Cutie's here as well. So we had a private concert for, you know, Ben Gibbard and
for Seattle
Dave
rock royalty.
Apparently, they knew some of the guys in the opening band. So when I found that out, which I figured was probably the case, I thought, they'll take off before we play. But they actually stayed for a couple songs, and that's my story.
Such is life.
But
now
that's not why I'm edgy.
Get him up on Twitter and be like, hey, saw my band the other night.
That's right. He paid to see me play. I've not seen Death Cab yet, so I guess I got to return the favor now.
Yeah.
No, just after that, it was a long weekend, you know, driving back from Seattle. I think we left at almost 1 a.m., and you get back at, you know, 4:15 when we got back into town. Not to mention we had some... We hit some traffic, we were late, then we almost had a meltdown of the vehicle, which you can see in our hilarious new YouTube video on the Hello Morning Band page. So it was just kind of a stressful trip, and then, it was just some random various people sending me emails this week. Just being discouraging.
Just to tee you off.
Yeah, just to make me mad. So I'm mad.
There's a special layer of hell reserved for those people.
Yeah, so anyway, it's a little edgy. But we got a good show tonight playing opening for Two Door Cinema Club, which is some Irish lads.
I began my month-long residency at a local Portland club here doing 6 to 8 in the evening on Wednesdays. So it's sort of a happy hour. People after work come out. And the first set that we did... There was people there, but it wasn't full. And by the time we were done, the club had filled out. But what we realized is it's not good to do like a straight on rock show right from the beginning, because that noise just goes out there and reverberates around. So we had to make some adjustments for this week. We're going to start with the quiet set for an hour and let people mingle and fill in the room, and then hit them with the harder
good.
Stuff.
Sounds good. A good plan.
For those of our listeners not familiar with a residency, why don't you explain?
Oh, residency. It's basically you have an arrangement with one particular club, and it could be a weekly thing. I think people do it monthly even, you know, where you just have a regular time slot. It's every Wednesday or, you know, first Sunday of the month or something like that. And it's just an ongoing gig. And it's been cool for us because it's made us think about how can we make each show a little bit different without having to stress ourselves out too much. So thought about bringing guest artists in and doing different cover songs each time we play. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been fun.
Well, we've got some news to get into, and we have a little recap of last week's episode talking about cover songs and discussion around that, and lots of good feedback from you, the listeners, from the blog and calls and also an email. So let's get to the news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Performance royalty income is still on the rise. ASCAP reported that in 2009, performance royalty collections rose to $995 million for its 380,000 members, paying out more than $863 million. That's up from $819 million in 2008 and $741 million in 2007. And foreign performance royalty revenue grew to nearly $302 million. YouTube and its engineers are working on a self-service method that will give its users the ability to upload and provide their streaming content for rent, according to Hunter Walk, who heads product management at YouTube. The option aims to keep Google's video site on a path to continually simplify the site and its features. Walk says engineers also have been working on a process that simplifies the ability for people to upload movies to the site that have been created on a mobile phone. Are you no longer a fan of something on Facebook? Right on the heels of changing the fan button to the like button, Facebook just made it easier to unlike your favorite Facebook pages through the embedded fan box widgets. While many users have actually requested that Facebook implement a full functioning dislike feature to express negative sentiment, this feature is simply an easier way to not be a fan of existing Facebook pages that you currently like. And those were some quick and easy headlines I thought were interesting and useful.
The dislike button thing, there shouldn't be a dislike button on there. That's just mean. It's like reviewers. You know, I feel like music reviewers, there's so much music out there now that if you don't like something, just don't review it. Like, why do you have to waste all that negativity on?
Well, yeah. This button that they're talking about is just so it'll stop coming down your feed.
The unlike one, yeah. I understand, yeah. to stop being in the feed, but the dislike one that people are requesting, that's so mean.
It kind of invites a certain amount of hazing. I mean, there's especially among teenagers and stuff who are online, those social networks, is they like to use, you know, those sort of options for negative purposes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we want to really enable that.
Yeah, I don't see that going over well. In fact, there was a lot of complaints about the addition of this unliking feature, just because a lot of brands that do their marketing on there, and a band or artist musician would fall under that umbrella. But a lot of like the bigger brands were complaining because, you know, a lot of people were starting to unlike, where before it was kind of like once they got them, they
right,
were there.
They
but
them.
I did notice in the analytics section for Facebook that it used to be called something else, but now you can see how many people have hidden your feed.
Oh.
Not in your personal profile, but for a brand page, like a profile page. So, I mean, you can still hide people. So, that's kind of the same thing. They might as well have unliked you, you know?
Right.
I think the reason they said they were doing this is because to make the numbers a little more accurate. So, like, if I've got a brand that's spamming everybody and getting thousands of fans, but then they all hide me, it doesn't...
Right.
It's
and
a little
we
more
also
truthful.
Know how effective, like, if your band page or whatever is sending out updates every week and you just think that everybody's happy with it, and then you suddenly find out that almost everybody has hidden you, then you'll realize that your marketing campaign is not working.
I'm still waiting for Facebook to return to how they worked in, like, early fall of 2009.
Not going to happen.
I liked that. I liked you better than Facebook.
Facebook, listen to me. I liked you better in the old days.
You're not the same.
That's why I told you. I think the door is opening for somebody to come in and grab the hearts and minds of someone like you, Chris. Mm.
You know, I did notice, I mean, we mentioned in our last roundtable how Facebook is adding like buttons outside of their network, so you see it in other on other websites. And I've seen that in a few different places. And, yeah, it's interesting. I wonder, I don't understand if those buttons show up whether you're logged in to Facebook
those
or
buttons
not.
Are embedded on the site themselves.
Okay, so, the
so they're
site
there
owners,
regardless if you're logged in or not.
Site owners are putting those buttons on there.
Yeah, so basically when they rolled that feature out, they already had like 30 brands, you know, that they'd been working with ahead of time, like major brands. I know Levi's was one where they already had those features embedded. I bookmarked a blog article that had a link to all those different brands. Haven't really taken the time to go look at it and see exactly
I've seen,
how it
I mean,
works.
I don't think the websites I've come across were necessarily like Facebook partners or anything. They see, it was just blog articles, like news articles that had the like button on
yeah,
them.
And those have changed. I mean, a lot of people have updated that. Yeah. So, but anyway, YouTube is interesting. I didn't know if... I know that CD Baby, I just made our YouTube account a partner, YouTube partner. I got accepted, even though we don't have that many views yet. We're just kind of building the YouTube presence for CD Baby, but it asked me to link to an account if we wanted to allow people to check out videos. So, like a video rental type service. So, that'll be pretty huge if they launch that and become successful. And it'd be interesting to see as well if they start doing these things where someone can, you know, generate income outside of just, you know, streams, how many people have watched the video, if they'll open up the partnership program to everybody or have some sort of way that people can at least put up content that they want to rent, you know, put out for rental without having like a proven number of views already. But we'll see what happens with that. And performance royalties on the rise. And that was just ASCAP. In the U.S., there's three performance rights organizations that kind of compete in the same space. And I know in other countries there's different ones. But I know a lot more music being streamed and a lot more people at the top getting most of that 380 million.
Yeah.
Or 380,000 members. Most of them are not getting some of that money.
Now, you get performance royalties from streaming, but not from radio.
You do get from radio?
Both. Oh, you do?
Yes.
Both. Okay.
Yes.
Even though you're not actually performing on a stage.
It's still a performance of the song.
It's true.
But it did start in the live arena. And I don't know. I've thought about having somebody from ASCAP or BMI or CSAC on the show to talk about performance royalties. I may do it. I know many of our listening audience and in the indie community have disdain for those companies, so I've kind of avoided the issue. But if it's something where, you know, if our audience really wants, you know, us to get somebody on the podcast to interview and ask them some good questions about, you know, how it really affects indie artists and, you know, maybe why indie artists aren't getting more money than they should, then I'll be happy to do so. So if you want to send me an email or post a comment on the website, do so.
I know, my band, we haven't gotten any kind of significant radio play, but we've certainly been played, you know, many times on various local programs on commercial stations and college shows and stuff like that, and I've never seen a dime from ASCAP.
Well, I know the big complaint for a lot of indie artists is not even just radio, but, you know, venues have to pay license fees in order to have music performed in their right. venue. And, you know, all the clubs in town are basically forced to, but none of the bands actually playing night after night in those clubs are seeing a cent from that.
Yeah.
In
mm-hmm.
fact, even some of the bigger name, like especially in the indie community, moving up to the small major label community, aren't seeing any money from performing night after night in clubs that are paying fees in order to have that music mm-hmm. there. So that's where the big beef comes with a lot of indie artists, and where I would, you know, say, yeah, the only income I've seen personally from performance royalties is still from, you know, back in the small town poets days and getting, you know, on traditional radio. And I still get, I think my last check was like a dollar or something. It was sad.
That's cute. You should have framed it.
It reminds me of that Seinfeld episode. I don't know if you've seen that. He gets played for like a little split second on the super terrific happy hour, like this Japanese show. And so he keeps getting checks for 3 cents. And so his hand goes numb for signing checks for 3 cents. It's a classic. All right. Well, let's discuss a little bit about cover songs. First off, you know, I think it's funny. Anytime I get someone like a lawyer on the show, which Scott is a lawyer, I always get, there's always comments on the podcast side about picking apart like little words that he said. I mean, people were picking apart, you know, what was really a cover song. And
right,
we all know what a cover song is. I mean, the point of the podcast wasn't to get real technical. We've actually had an entertainment lawyer on in the past. It was, I think, an episode in the 20s, might have even been the teens, where we got a little bit more technical about copyright issues. The main thing people kept asking, you know, because I put out there on Twitter, and I think it was just my personal Twitter account, what do you guys want us to cover? And several people responded, hey, could you please really cover how to properly license a cover song? And so the whole idea was just to really get people headed in the right direction, because there's just a lot of confusion about it still. I thought it might be interesting to open up for discussion the
fact that the world doesn't need any more Bob Dylan covers.
Yeah, well, that too. But just, you know, it's an interesting discussion we've had in our band, where there, we have somebody who pretty much in the band refuses to do a cover song. And it's somewhat frustrating, you know, because like for every day we see artists here have some breakout success just because they did a cool version of a cover song. And then people discover their music and then become fans of their music. So I just thought,
I've seen you guys do a cover song before.
Yes, but you haven't seen it lately, have you?
Oh, I haven't.
Well, now, I've been getting more into cover songs, and we're working on a new cover song with my band, Nervous and the Kid. And I think that, you know, there have been, over the time of recorded music, a lot of great songs have been written. And, you know, like, I don't, as performers, I don't think we always need to use original material. I think that people love to hear songs that they've heard before. You know, I mean, that's what the enjoyment of music is for the most part. It's people making an emotional attachment to something and then getting jazzed when they hear it again. I think that cover songs, and especially in the internet age, they're so valuable, especially, you know, putting them on YouTube and stuff like that can be a big promotional push.
I think it's a good way to bridge the gap for a new listener between your sound and then something familiar. So like basically when we try and do covers, we always try and put our own spin on it. Mm-hmm. So there's something new. And in that, the listener can tell kind of what our aesthetic is and what our music, our original music is about, because it's arranged in this unique way. But then also it's a familiar tune that they, you know, they can hum along to. So they're like probably more apt to feel welcomed by it. And then once they hear that tune, they'll say, oh, okay, well, I'll listen to these guys' originals too. It's worked well for us doing that.
Yeah, and I understand some people not necessarily wanting to maybe record a cover song, but I think live it's really helpful as far as like, one, you can pick a song that does something that the rest of your music doesn't do. Whether it be, you know, you've got all high energy songs that are original, then but you don't have some good, a good like mellow moment in the show, it, a cover song could work perfectly for that.
No,
or vice versa, you know.
Now I should ask you guys, we have a cover that we recorded for our most recent recording, and I was thinking of just not putting it on the album and using it as sort of a bonus track and making a video for YouTube and sort of giving it away or whatever, so I don't have to deal with licensing. Would you guys advise that? Do you think that's a good move?
If you like the recording, I'd put it out.
Do you think I could I'd run into any problems down the line with having that song on there? I mean, because every time, like, say, I do another pressing of it, you know, you have to repay for the royalties and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it is something that's more of a additional headache. But if the recording came out really well and people are connecting with it, I think it's worth it.
Especially because if someone's going on iTunes and they want to find that song by the original artist,
right,
you're going to come up in the search potentially, and then they'll say, oh, well, let's check out this version. Oh, I like Nervous and the Kid. What are they all about?
Yeah, and YouTube's been a prime example of that. It's kind of surprising to me just because I don't go to YouTube and search for music videos of like a single that's been
right,
released, you know. usually if I go to YouTube searching for videos, it's either on a topic I'm interested in or a specific band I want to see other stuff from, like live footage and things. But it's unbelievable how many artists have had success on YouTube by doing cover songs. And so people are searching and find that stuff. And the song that we did... we did a David Bowie song. What is it called?
Space Oddity.
Space Oddity. How could I forget? And, you know, I put it up there on our YouTube channel. Just, it's a live version of it, and it's kind of cool. And it's definitely one of the videos that has the most views out of all our videos. Actually, the number one video is the one that we did on how to make a band T-shirt, which gets lots of views. But... yeah, so I mean, doing a cover song is a great way to get found.
That's true. That's true. Well, that's I'm not sure yet because we're still in the mixing process. If it has that star quality that I can, you know, just put it on there and think that it's, you know, I guess I have I don't know if the quality is going to be as good as I want it to be. So there's that question as well.
Yeah. But. To me, when I was thinking about the idea of a cover song, it kind of made me want to go back and revisit some of the things that Tom Jackson talked about on the podcast, you know, putting together a good show. And like in Small Town Poets, a lot of our music, we had upbeat songs, we had a lot of mid-tempo songs, but we didn't have a lot of fun songs.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between an upbeat song and a fun song. And so we came up with this idea, since all of us were born in the 70s that and influenced by a lot of, you know, the just, you know, the big rock bands throughout the years, especially from the 60s and 70s, that we do a 70s medley. And it had, I forget, Listen to the Music, it had Don't Bring Me Down, it had all these really cool songs, and we just put them together in a really nice arrangement.
Oh, wow.
It was like 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it was, we would do four songs and then we'd do that medley. And man, after that, it didn't matter what we did. Everyone was just eating out of the palm of our hand. It was such a way to see, like, because the crowd, you know, we were still building a following. A lot of people had heard our songs, but that was just like, it was something so universal that was far bigger than our music that just kind of like brought everybody together. And it, like, the crowd was transformed after it was over. It was pretty amazing. And that's the kind of thing that I think a cover song is really good for.
A good example of the power of a cover song, you know, to really suddenly people who may not have related to you before are suddenly relating to you through familiar music.
So here's my trick with cover songs, which I already said we've been trying, you know, we try to do these different arrangements where the groove and the texture and maybe the feel or the rhythm or the tempo or something is very radically different from the original. And then if you like that arrangement a lot, you just scrap the melody and the lyrics and make your own song. And because you can't copyright chord changes, you know, don't, like, if it's totally obvious, but little segments of this new version of a Bob Dylan song you came up with, just make it your own.
There you go.
Yeah.
Songwriting secrets with Chris.
Mm-hmm. Steal from others. Adjust.
Adjust.
And claim it's your own.
Claim it as
everybody, let's be cool.
That reminds me of that video that's circulating. Actually, they're CD Baby artists out of Australia, I believe. They're like a comedy music group down there, and it's like every song is the same, can be played over the same four chords, and they just keep playing these four chords over and over again, and singing all these hit songs just back to back to back.
I've seen that video. That is hilarious.
It's pretty funny, and good example. The crowd went nuts after they were done. Yeah. I mean, because it's just like, all my favorite songs
are exactly the same.
Exactly the same. That's right.
I did like that little bit of history threw in there about the mechanical royalties being a term that came from the old player pianos. That basically a cover song, because the only way to replay a song before recording was to like print out one of those long sheets that a player piano would play. So that they called it mechanical because songs were actually being reproduced mechanically with the player piano. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I've said it before on the podcast that a lot of the issues that, you know, talking about as far as cover songs and copyright, there's going to be some big big changes ahead, I think. And I don't know where I fall on this issue, but I think the, you know, copyright's obviously been weakened and will probably be weakened even more. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but some people say it's a great thing. Other people are very upset by it. And one of the, actually, a comment from one of our listeners, let me find it. Oh, it goes by the name of Bono. I'm pretty sure it's not Bono.
Not the actual Bono.
It could be, though. He said, don't forget about getting the rights to use the cover song in your music video. Sure, the U.S. laws allow anyone to re-record and release any already previously released song, but when you add video to the overall picture, you are talking about sync rights, and this is a whole different ballgame. And he's correct. And this is where I need to do a little research to find out what truly is supposed to happen with, like, you know, bands and artists releasing music on YouTube. Like, because technically you did do a sync license, I mean, a synchronization of somebody's song to your video. But the precedent is obviously set that you don't have to do anything because nobody's talking about it. The record labels aren't fighting it. The performance royalty has been an issue, and YouTube pays for that. But as far as, like, sync royalties, nobody's paying those.
And so, because plenty of cover songs on YouTube.
And because you think they're sort of making a delineation between actual TV and movies and YouTube videos?
I don't know. The way a sync license works is totally different than a mechanical license. And if people required that, they would just cease to have videos on YouTube with songs.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I don't know if it's one of those things where the nature of things have changed in order to, if you want to capture even just performance royalties, you're just going to have to let go of this other stream of income. But I'll have to look into that. And Bono does bring a good point. Maybe next time he'll call in and sing Where the Streets Have No Name. Yeah. I got some other comments. Ted Shin asked, if I wanted to use a cover song that I've recorded and it's over 100 years old, is that considered public domain and therefore exempt from a mechanical royalty? The song in question is In the Bleak Midwinter, written in 1872 and set to music in 1906.
You are safe.
But this website, pdinfo.com, is a great place to go to search the database of stuff that is definitely in the public domain. If you're doing Christmas music, you need to go to this site because there's a lot of songs that people think are public domain that are not, especially Little Drummer Boy. That's the one everyone gets stuck on. But anyway, right on their website, it says music and lyrics published in 1922 or earlier are in the public domain in the United States. No one can claim ownership of a song in the public domain. Therefore, public domain songs may be used by anyone. Music recordings, however, are copyright protected separately from musical compositions. There are no sound recordings in the public domain in the USA. So there you have it. And I think the reason there's no recordings in the public domain is just because recording
has only been around so long.
Yeah, it's only been around so long. And so you are free to record any song before that was originally published before 1922, and you can do whatever you want with it. So, there you go. Question answered. Check. And then Andy asked, what's the story on licensing a cover song that you want to give away as a freebie? Does a full royalty have to be paid on each free download? And the answer to that is yes.
Because you're using this other person's music for your own promotion, so...
Yeah, to them it doesn't matter if you got paid for it or not. You're basically creating another copy of your music, that song, when that person downloads it. So it doesn't matter whether or not you got paid or not. The original copyright owner is supposed to be reimbursed for that. It's the same if you printed up a bunch of CDs and gave them all away. You owe the royalties on that, whether or not you got paid.
Right.
So
I guess that makes
it's
sense.
It's all because the license is supposed to, you know, be due when you make the copy, not when you make the sale.
Gotcha.
Another question answered on the DIY Musician Podcast.
I thought there are a lot of bands, tons of bands that do, you know, kind of informal releases of cover albums, or they'll put an EP out and throw a cover song on there, and they don't go through the proper licensing. And I think in most cases that's, and I'm not saying it's fine from a moral, legal standpoint, but it's fine from this standpoint that they're not going to get caught. Like, they're below the radar. But At the same time, if you put together a version of a song that someone else wrote and you're really proud of it, it seems dumb not to license it because there could be an opportunity for that song out there somewhere. And then you're going to get caught, and basically then the publisher can revoke your right to continue selling it if you've broken that up front.
Yeah. There was an issue. Actually, it happened with a song I got in a Macy's commercial. It was the song's called Sing, Sing, Sing.
Benny Goodman?
Benny Goodman. That's what it was. It was a Benny Goodman song, and they had gotten the proper, you know, mechanical license, so they had thought. But what they didn't know is back then, Benny Goodman's band used to quote another Benny Goodman song within the performance.
What?
And they didn't know that that was actually a quote from a second song. And so I was getting this license. It was like, you know, it was a TV commercial that was timed very briefly. Like, it was a special promotion for Macy's. And they're like, put on the brakes on it all of a sudden, like, wait a second, the publisher's saying they didn't get the right license. And I was like sweating bullets. Yes, they did. Yes, they did. And then we found out it was literally like the horn section just quoted this other song for like 8 bars.
Just the melody?
Yeah. And so they had to, it was actually, they required them to.
They had to get two?
They had to pay up for that. And then once they did, the publisher okayed the sync license.
Wow. Oh my gosh, that is
nuts. So that's where it can get you in trouble. And, you know, it's, if you're doing covers and you're, you know, out there, and especially that kind of music's a good example, make sure you got your bases covered. So
how in the world did they even figure that out?
Yeah, and
some smart jazz scholar panicked at the last minute.
Yeah, those people that own those catalogs know every note that's in their music to make sure that...
What I was thinking, though, before was, even if you're not trying to pitch your song to film or video or whatever, if you have no intentions for it besides maybe just putting it on a disc and making some fans with it, I still think it's probably a good idea to do it, because a cover song can open opportunities for you that you weren't looking for. You never imagined, and all of a sudden someone stumbles upon it and they want to pay you a lot of money for it, or... who knows what? So it's better to just protect yourself up front to make sure that that opportunity isn't wasted if it comes up.
Well, I mean, if you're going to put it online, it just seems like something you should do. I mean, because there's that sort of viral nature of things online. You know, you don't know how much, you know, attention, you know, how many copies you're going to sell, how many downloads, and you may not know for a month or two after you've, you know, put it up there and start doing promotion. So it's better to, you know, cover your butt.
Yeah, and it's not that much money. I mean, it's 9.1 cents per song, plus, you know, a little admin fee to execute the license. So, I mean, you're not talking about thousands of dollars. It's, you know, for 100 downloads, it's going to be like...
$9.10?
$9.10, plus, I think, $15 admin fee or whatever. So, I mean, just take care of it. You know, chances, like Chris was mentioning, chances of getting caught is very slim. But, you know, if you're a serious artist, it just looks better if you take care of business the right way. And then when people want to do business with you, they're not worried, is this person sketchy or not? So, and then if you have a song that happens to make some notoriety, you'd want people to pay you for years.
Exactly.
So that's right.
Well, they may be sketchy people, but at least they've done the proper legal paperwork.
That's
up front.
Right. There you go. Well, I think it's time to get into some listener calls.
CD Baby Podcast.
Message line 206-426-5683.
The number you have dialed.
206-426-5683.
Kevin, love your show. Just a quick comment. You mentioned that you had not checked a Gmail address in some time. Hey, you can forward Gmail addresses to any place you want. So it's not like you have to abandon the address or go back and check it periodically. Just forward it to the address you're using actively, and you're set. See you later. Bye.
Hey, this is Rafe. I play as Trick or Disaster, and I also manage an artist named Lindsay Kent. You can find both of us on CBB or iTunes. Just about giving yourself away for free. I think there's a difference if you're just starting out or if you've got stuff going a little bit. Like for Lindsay, she's kind of got some momentum. So her music is available on basically every torrent site. We have our Google Alerts up, and every single day, tons of torrent sites, probably 4 or 5 torrent sites, add Lindsay's torrent. So for us, giving it away isn't a choice. If someone wants to get Lindsay's music for free, they can do it relatively easily, and we're not doing anything to get them to take that down or anything. And I think the fact that people have to kind of do it illegally adds value to the music, because if you're going to go put the effort to go to a torrent website and do it, then you see value in it, as opposed to if we as artists were like, we're just going to give away the entire album, it means we don't see the value in it. So the music is available for free. It's getting passed around whether or not we like it, and we do like it. But I don't think that means we need to necessarily, I mean, obviously a song or two for free, and you can hear it on MySpace and you can hear everything on YouTube. But I think it's better for us not to have it directly available for free through us, and it is still available on all the torrent websites, and anyone who really wants to get it for free can get it. And without people feeling like they're getting ripped off by buying it, because it's just being given away for free anyways. Anyways, those are my thoughts. Sorry if this was too long. You can look up Trick of Disaster or Lindsay Kent on CDV. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
All right.
I thought that was a good perspective.
Yeah, it was a different take. I don't know if I agree with it, but it's an interesting idea.
I think I agree with it.
Well, let's hear it.
The way he's talking about it adding value, the fact that people are taking the time to upload it to torrent sites, and that that they're not actually putting it available for free on their website, I think those two things combined do add value to the music. Like, you can see that people are going out of their way to get it, and people want it bad enough that they're going to go to a torrent site to get it. I mean, granted, it would be better if they actually bought the album for the artist, but I think that it does add value to the music, whereas if he offered it for free on their website, people would be like, oh, anybody could get it for free, rather than anybody who's willing to, like, compromise their morals to get it for free, which is a little bit harder of a pill to swallow. So I don't know, you know, if in the end that's going to spell more sales or more fans for them. I think that his argument that it's creating more value for the music, for the product, is true.
Well, and I think one important element of what he said is that the artist that he's managing, her name's Lindsay Kent, I think he said, has got a good thing going. So there's already a buzz built around her. I've talked to Rafe before. I can't remember what happened. They're up in Canada. I can't remember what happened that kind of built this buzz. I think she's done some YouTube cover songs. Actually, I think that's because Rafe's this YouTube genius guy. Has, I think, millions of views for some of his YouTube videos, or at least thousands and thousands.
Right.
So I know that they've already got that kind of momentum. So in that case, I see what he's saying. You know, if you're a brand new artist and nobody knows who you are, they're not going to torrent sites to look for you.
Right. Right.
I was on vacation once, and actually, that part, that little detail doesn't matter so much, but I checked.
That's nice that you take vacation every once in a while.
Yeah, I was on vacation in Hawaii, actually. And, middle of the week, I started to get, like, internet withdrawal. So I found a place where I could check my email, and someone had tipped me off that my album was on this torrent site, and it was also found in this blog where they were giving the whole thing away for free, and it was available somewhere else. He had just sort of, like, found a bunch of stuff. And I wrote him back. I was like, yeah, what can I do? Like, should I just write them all individually? He wrote back. He runs a record label. And he said, you know, just leave it alone and take it as a compliment. It's like, well, all right, I'm going back on vacation. It's sort of a kind of defeatist, and then also the positive spin on being defeated.
Yeah.
It's always good.
Yeah.
I got my butt kicked, but hey.
Yeah, I guess, you know, if someone wants it, it's a compliment.
I mean, in the end, what do you want? In the end, you want diehard fans who'll come back and buy your album every year. If, you know, some of these people who end up with an album for free from a blog or a torrent site, you know, there's potential diehard fans in there. Probably a lot of them aren't going to be diehard fans, but you have more opportunity to reach those people who may become such a fan that they don't go to the torrent sites. They go directly to you because they realize that how valuable your music is.
Indeed. If you'd like to call our listener line, the number is 206-426-5683. We always appreciate the calls, and if you have something good to say, and keep it brief, we'll make sure and get it on the roundtable edition of the podcast. We like controversy. Someone say something controversial.
Yeah.
That, or, you know, mistake stories, a funny road story, a comment about one of the more recent episodes of the podcast.
You can tell us if we've lost our magic.
Yeah, Robert Lee King, he's telling us that weekly now.
But he still listens?
Apparently so, and
he doesn't like it, though.
We've still got magic, Robert. We do.
All right, here we go. This is from the UK. Very, very official. If I could do a British accent, I would read it in a British accent, but I would sound horrible. It's from Roseanne Hamilton. I think I have a great idea. I've been thinking about what you said about radio play, how the artists get paid for plays and the listeners get it for free. How about getting an audio advert at the beginning of every MP3, and every time someone downloads the song, the advertiser gives you a bit of cash, and they can buy it off iTunes if they don't want the ad. I don't know if this has already been done, but I'd love to try it. Problem is, I have no idea how to go about it. Little help, please? I'm not all that technically minded. I'd also like to say that I'm so hooked on your podcast, and it's really given me so much more momentum and conviction in my work.
Cool.
We're changing people's lives.
Nice. Well, it sounds like she's almost talking about like something like a podcast.
Well, no, she's talking about like getting an actual sponsor to put at the beginning of a song.
I'm not crazy about that idea for a couple reasons.
This song is brought to you by Target.
Yeah,
please enjoy.
Well, yeah, all of a sudden your art is tied in with commerce in a, you know, very obvious, annoying way. Then it's annoying to the listener that wants to just load it in, and they're going to eventually associate that feeling of annoyance with your music, which you don't want. And then lastly, if it's available on iTunes without the ad, someone's going to get it and then turn that into an MP3 and put that online for free, and people will still be able to get the version that doesn't have the annoying ad if they really want the song.
Well, that's why I mentioned podcast. I think that that business model by itself will not work. But I think that if you tried it into a podcast, like a lot of podcasts have sponsors. If you had like a podcast that was based around your music, where you played a couple of songs, had an advertisement, and you know, were able to get a royalty or whatever, or a payment from the advertiser, depending on how many people downloaded it, then you could, and you sort of build it as a show. You know, maybe you could have a live performance, you could have a couple of your songs, you could have an interview or whatever, and have it sponsored by somebody. I mean, obviously that's a lot more work, but I think that a model like that might be successful, where a model of just tacking a little advertisement onto an MP3 would be obnoxious. If I had that in my iTunes library, I would do everything I could to delete it as soon as possible, because I wouldn't want it popping on when I had shuffle on.
A podcast idea is not a bad one. The artist talking for a few minutes, saying something about the song, maybe a little ad from audible.com. They love to sponsor podcasts.
Yeah. I can see Kevin's wheels ticking.
Yeah. His wheels are ticking?
No.
Uh-oh.
No. I'm my brain is fried this week.
Speaking of ticking,
yes.
I can't wait after this podcast to discuss Lost.
It's coming to an end. All things are coming to an end when Lost ends. Well, I think that's going to do it for this edition of the show. If you guys, meaning you guys listening, have any other topics or individuals you would like to see interviewed or covered on the podcast, please email us or send me a shout out through Twitter or call our listener line or leave a message on the blog in the comment section, just because, you know, we want to be here for you. And that's all.
That's all.
That's all. I can't think of anything. It's Friday.
That's all we want to
do. It's Friday afternoon.
Send us some coffee so Kevin can wake up.
Yeah, I should probably eat something. Cheetos didn't really cut it. But yeah, so if you want to let us know what you're thinking, what you'd like to hear from, we've got a few interviews lined up. Some people, a really exciting interview possibility that I just cannot speak about until it actually happens. Yeah, so let me know so we can hunt those people down and get them on the podcast and answer your questions and all that. Anything else?
Word.
All right.
Peace.
That's it. We'll catch you next time.